Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN. The name of the organization, and it might be an organization you haven't heard about before, which I love, because I didn't know much about, and I still don't. So I'm going to learn, too, about this important organization called Paws for Patrick. Mags Romer is here. She is the co-chair of the Young Professional Board, also a co-founder of the organization. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm okay, Mags. Tell me about Paws for Patrick.
So Paws for Patrick is one of those organizations that unfortunately came from heartbreak. About 5 years ago, my older brother Patrick, who was living with depression and anxiety for most of his life, unfortunately died by suicide. And we knew that we wanted to do something right away, my family, my community, and I. And we didn't know what exactly we wanted to do, but we knew it would involve mental health. And we thought, and we came to the conclusion that therapy never really worked for Patrick. It's just not for everyone, and that's how it is. But the one thing that did were animals and his dogs. And so we combined all of these things, and thus Paws for Patrick came to be. And well, now here we are 5 years later, and it's incredible.
Well, it is, and it's wonderful. So thank you for doing this. What you've done, among other things, beside helping a whole lot of people, you've taken suicide out of the closet. I mean, people even are hesitant sometimes, you tell me if you've noticed this as well, to say that word, particularly Absolutely. If it's someone in their family or someone they know. Oh, he passed away, and you don't mention that word. Should we be talking about this more often?
Absolutely. I mean, I have come to notice that usually when people talk about a sudden death and don't give a reason, it's almost always entirely suicide, which is horrible that it's happening, and also horrible that it's not being talked about. And that's one thing that I think is so important about what we're doing, is just even in the past 5 years, I've seen such a difference in the way that we talk about it, and especially in the last 10 years in the way we talk about it. And through this organization is just one small step that we're doing to get there.
Which is very, very important. I want to talk about the animal part of this in a moment. First, tell me a little more about Patrick. For example, how old was he when he passed away?
Of course. Patrick was 18 when he passed away. It was at the end of his senior year. He was going to attend Colorado State University to study graphic design. He's always a very big artist. He got that gene in the family. The lucky one, also a very talented athlete and a huge animal lover, hence where we got. Throughout all his life, he always loved animals. He always found a way to be with them, formed a special connection with them, whether it was our childhood dog or, as he grew older, his dog Cece that he got when he was 13, became his lifeline. And we say that she held his soul and just gave him so much life that we are so lucky to have had with him in so many years, that we're so grateful to have gotten with him. He's a very compassionate person, and we combined all of those aspects of him to create this organization that honors him so dearly.
What is the mission of Paws for Patrick?
The mission of Paws for Patrick is improving the mental health of young people, which is now we do nationally. We're in all 50 states, which we're really excited about, through the comfort and connection of animals.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we do that three ways. We have three programs. Our ESA program, which stands for Emotional Support Animals, and that is essentially a young person will come and fill out a form on our website, which is quick, super simple, easy, and we do everything that they need to help them get an emotional support animal, which there's actually no training for. Those ones are super easy. It's getting a certificate. And we also pay for the animal as well as any necessary training. That's our first program. And then we also have our therapy dog program, which we have 66 handler and dog teams that have participated over the past 5 years. And they go into various places such as schools, mental health facilities, and community settings, and just impact positively young people's mental health wherever they go. It really makes a huge difference. And that was one thing we noticed. Patrick had struggles going to school, but when there was a dog there, it's instant yes. And then our third program, which is our newest program, is our facility dog program. And these are specially trained dogs that are placed full-time in schools and clinical settings. And they're designed to provide consistent daily support for young people. So you can picture, like, most simply at a school, a social worker might have a facility dog who's always in the office with them during school hours.
Are these dogs provided to both adults and younger people? And if so, how young?
So we focus on younger individuals up to 30 years old. And if we have the realms to support someone that's outside of this, we absolutely will.
And by providing, which is a longer answer, so we have to take a break in about a minute. But
okay.
I do want to know what having a dog. So for people, and I understand it because we, for years in our own little family, have had therapy dogs, and I've been involved with therapy dog programs on a national level as well as a local level here in the Chicago area with Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy. But what difference is having a dog there? The dog is just a dog. What does the dog do? You know, so I'm sure you may have heard that from people. I don't know. So what does just a dog do?
Yeah, I mean, everything to me. And cats, too. I mean, not everyone can connect with the cat level, but I have to vouch for them. They don't need to understand what someone's going through to provide them love and comfort. It's almost like they can feel it. And even if they can't feel it, they're still going to come and give you love and they're going to comfort you.
Is that unconditional something that dogs and cats provide, something that people generally are not capable of?
Absolutely. Something that they just can't do.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about, and we'll now have time to go deeper into emotional support animals, therapy dogs, and facility dogs, how you provide those dogs, and you have a big event coming up that I want to talk about as well. We are talking about an organization called Paws for Patrick. We'll also tell you how you can reach out to Paws for Patrick, all when we come back on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Mags Romer is here, an organization that has only been around a couple of years. We've not talked about this organization on the radio, but that's my bad in a sense, because this is a very important organization. It's called Paws for Patrick, and what they do, you're a co-founder of the organization, Mags, also on the Young Professional Board. I wish I could be on any young professional anything, but that's a whole other problem I have. So this organization provides emotional support animals, therapy dogs, and facility dogs to people that are fill in the blank for me on that.
Filling in the form?
Well, these dogs are available for people that have been diagnosed with?
Yes.
Okay, explain.
So these are for, an ESA specifically, is for anyone with a mental illness. And that can range from so many things. Depression and anxiety are typically the most common, but there are so many mental illnesses that an ESA can help with. And they can provide comfort to anyone and improve anyone's mental health. Whereas therapy dogs, they don't need to be certified to specifically go help someone with mental illnesses. However, there is so much science behind the connection and comfort that animals provide that they go to these mental health facilities or even schools or various community settings or one-on-one visits, and they provide this connection that improves the mental health, even if they're not an ESA specified for that individual. And then facility dogs are in the similar bunch with the therapy dogs.
Do you ever get other family members that say, okay, here is my son, my grandson, potentially, because the son or grandson, the person with the mental illness, if it is that, may not have the ability to fill out the form. I mean, they have the ability to write and all that, but they may not realize that this is something that can help me. I mean, from what I understand, experts I've spoken to, is that one big challenge is when there is medication involved, and there often is, that even convincing many of those individuals to take the medication can be a challenge.
Yeah, and I think that this is where stigma kind of comes in, and having a dog, you know, yes, it's challenging to have a dog, it absolutely is, but in a different kind of way. And we definitely do have people filling out for others, especially when they're those younger individuals. Parents will often fill out. And that's also huge because when you're helping a family member improve their mental health, you're not only improving for that one individual, but for the entire household and for the entire family. It's making a positive difference on their lives.
Now, do you do due diligence as well to ensure that these people are who they say they are all over the country?
Yes.
How do you do that? And also to ensure that, I mean, there are some mental illnesses where I might be concerned that the person could harm the dog.
Yes. So we, Ed Patrick was one of the biggest animal advocates anyone would ever meet. So it is very important to us that we make sure that this person is going to take good care of the animal, whatever it might be, and that their animal will be in good hands. And that's done through the process of getting them the certificate, which has to be given by a therapist or counselor, someone. So they meet with them and are then able to grant the certificate when they understand that, number one, they will benefit from having the ESA, and number two, that the ESA will be safe and protected and in good hands.
So what you do is you enlist the expertise of third-party individuals to help ensure that it's a good fit. And how do you ensure that, okay, this is the right dog for that person, but this dog is a better dog for that person? And where do you get the dogs from?
So with the matching of the animals, it's all about lifestyle. You know, some animals or dogs need to be outside constantly and have a big yard and walked around all the time. And some dogs are, you know, smaller. They maybe need shorter walks. They don't need as much running space. So kind of talking through things like that to help them find what's right for them. And then we encourage shelter dogs. We're huge, huge, huge on rescuing, and Patrick was, our entire family is, so we really strongly encourage rescuing. So we have some connections with shelters around.
And do you provide or recommend the dog? And how do you get the dog if the person's in Oklahoma to that person? You're Chicago area based. Do they drive here to get the dog? How does that work?
So we can form the connections with the shelters nationally. And then usually, you know, it's up to the client how much help they want in picking out or finding their dog. But usually then when you are connected with your animal, it's you that's going to get it physically. But we can help you find it and do our best with that.
How many dogs have you placed approximately?
I believe we have placed... Ooh, I actually don't know the exact number. I know that we have over 150 new applications every month, though, and that
Wow.
we have zero young people waiting on support from us. So use that to do your math, although I don't have an exact number for you right now.
Well, the demand is clear based on what you just
Yes.
said. And also it takes finances to achieve getting these dogs to people, and in some cases, the training of the dogs as well. So speaking
yes,
of finances, you have a big benefit coming up.
Yes, which is huge because we do pay for the dogs and training. So to be able to do that, it's very important. But we have our benefit coming up on Friday, February 27th. It's from 6:30 to 10:30 at Loft 21 in Lincolnshire. It's going to be a paid sit-down dinner with Jordan's Food of Distinction, We'll have a silent auction, a live auction with things such as trips, rare bourbon, and therapy dog visits, as well as a DJ and a mentalist who I'm very excited to see.
Is he going to make people at the benefit open their wallets more? Is that the whole point of that?
Hopefully. And it's I've heard great things.
I'm sure
very
he is.
To see what it's all about.
All right. So again, give me the information where and when the benefit is and how people can get tickets.
So Friday, February 27th, 6:30 to 10:30 at Loft 21 in Lincolnshire, and tickets are being sold on our website. They are selling fast. There are not many left. They're selling fast as well.
Nice. And the website again is?
Pause for Patrick. Just first one that comes up, pauseforpatrick.org, right there. And the tickets are right on the homepage.
Right there. How much are the tickets?
They are $250 for one or $2,500 for a table.
All right. Or you could buy three or four tables. Pause for Patrick. Pauseforpatrick.org. Mags Romer, thank you so much. I mean, this organization is something we're going to keep in touch because this is very important work you're doing. Thank you for joining me. You may not ever want to live in Long Britain. I don't think that's pronounced right. Norway. Certainly the winter chill may play a role, but we're Chicagoans. We're tough, right? Well, February there, the temperature is on average 7 degrees, and typically they have 100 days of the year that are below zero. But that's not why. It's about the cats, not about the weather. Domestic cats, can you imagine living anywhere where they don't allow cats? Some of you maybe, and not me for sure. Domestic cats are forbidden in this town that I cannot pronounce. The explanation is the cats would harm the fragile environment and ecosystem. Indeed, cats can be efficient predators, but living in this environment when it's that cold outdoors, that's a death sentence. Besides, there's another death sentence for those cats, too, and that is polar bears. There are about 300 polar bears ranging around the archipelago that includes the town I cannot pronounce. In fact, residents who go beyond the city center, which is like a block, are advised to carry a gun just in case. After all, truly, polar bears are one of the few animals that actively will hunt humans. Something interesting as a side note. Scientists have recently found signs of natural selection in genes of polar bears linked to fat metabolism, helping the bears survive long-lasting periods as hunting conditions worsen for the bears due to climate change. So the polar bears are really highly endangered at this point in time all over the world, not only around this town I cannot pronounce in Norway, but everywhere in Canada, in Alaska, and elsewhere. Polar bears are disappearing because of the melting of the sea ice that they depended on to find their dinner, which tend to be seals. City officials in this town that I cannot pronounce warn that hungry bears might even be more prone to attack people now. There are about 1,500 residents of this town I cannot pronounce. And as I said, there are about 300 polar bears. So that's a lot of polar bears per person, right? So if you're out and about just taking a walk in the neighborhood in this town I cannot pronounce, it is not unlikely that you will bump into a polar bear, which is why the residents have been asked to carry a gun. Now, back to cats. Why are they prohibited? I don't have a clue. Their explanation makes no sense to me whatsoever. You can keep the cats indoors, and if they're outdoors, they'd be killed by polar bears anyway. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. It's been a minute since I spoke to Julie Oskirka on the radio. She is the founder of a Sound Beginning program, president of Positive Solutions for a Sound Beginning. Good morning, Julie.
Well, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I am great, with great news that we'll get to in a second. First of all,
that sounds good.
You know, we've seen this evolution or revolution, maybe both, and I want to talk to you about it. I'm talking about dog training methods. So some number of years ago, there was panic in the streets from you because more and more dog trainers were falling back on notions that we have to be dominant over our dogs, and we need to use choke collars. We need to use prong collars. We need to use shock collars. And that kind of faded away for some time. It was still there, but not as much. Then in the past couple of years, in part, I suggest due to social media success of a handful of trainers, shock collars and aversive punishment-based training has made a comeback. Am I right that it's been this bit of a roller coaster? And why do you think that is?
Well, you are right, number one. And number two, there's so many different reasons that we can speculate why we think this is happening. From my conversations with my fellow trainers and colleagues and everything, we tend to think that it's just the mindset of the general public right now because nobody has any time to do anything. And so they're looking for a quick fix. And most of those companies that are very heavy-handed, aversive, use all the old punishment horrible methods of training, they will give you a guarantee that, yes, I will fix your dog, guaranteed. You just pay me $2,000 for the week, and I'll give you back this great dog. And then they end up getting this dog that comes back that is basically all emotion is removed. You just have a shell. You have a dog. You have an animal that looks like a dog, but there's no life in them anymore because they have definitely just punished the life out of the dog to the point that the dog just doesn't offer any behavior because it's so fearful now that whatever it does, it's going to feel this pain and punishment. That's what I think is the main reason why. It's just people are looking for a quick fix. And then, like your book is talking about too, is that people don't look at the emotions of the dog by observing their body language, you know, because that's how they express their feelings. And so they just look at the dog and go, look how well behaved he is. And you and I and everybody else that we know within our training community, we go, oh my God, that poor dog is in such a panic, it's frozen in fear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my general opinion.
The thing is that, let me ask you another question, though. And then I want, mm-hmm. The thing is, I'll finish that sentence. But let me ask you another question. How do you feel about mm-hmm. board and train, where you drop off the dog at a boarding facility, they train the dog, and then some number of weeks later, you get the dog back, you spend, I don't know how much time, with the trainer that trained the dog, and one and done, that's it.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, I've always hated the board and train because how is the emotional tie between the dog and the family? Because the dog's not living with the family anymore. The dog is living in a kennel, taken out of the box for a few minutes, taught a bunch of things. Basically, it's taught with fear-based methods. You know, if you don't comply with what I'm telling you to do, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. And then you put the dog back in the box again. And so people don't know this. They just assume, oh, okay, my dog's going to come back well-trained. And so most of those board and train programs, almost all of the board and train programs are horrific, and they don't do anything other than just cause so much fear that the dog just doesn't react anymore. They're expensive. They offer you that guarantee, and then people are horrified when they find out what happens when they get the dog back. There are very few board and trains that we recommend, and we know the really good ones. There are ones that are definitely all positive reinforcement that really work with the dogs to understand the emotions, what's driving the behavior, and then they work with the family as well, trying to help them. But most of them are like a day training program. Some of them are a boarding program with training attached, because they will do that while you're on vacation or whatever. But most of them are not positive reinforcement at all. And I think the easy way for people to find out is just look at the credentials of who's doing the training.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no credentials, there's no training going on. It's just punishment. That's it.
Yeah. And make no mistake about it, dogs can learn just like people can. So if I look up at the sky and every time I do, I'm hit over the head with a baseball bat, I'm not going to look up to the sky as often. But then over time, if that person stops hitting me over the head, I'll begin looking up at the sky again at some point.
Yep. And then the boulders will be bigger with the punishment trainers. Because, well, the pebble that I dropped on your head wasn't good enough, so now I'm going to drop a brick on your head. So that's how the shock collars work with all the numbers on it. Well, I'm only using it at number one until the dog gets used to it and gets conditioned to the pain and becomes accustomed to it. And then the dog goes, well, but I really want that piece of ham that's sitting on the kitchen counter. So I'm going to take a chance to get it because the pain really wasn't that bad. So then those punishment trainers tell you, well, just dial it up. And then now you're burning the dog's neck. They have to go see a veterinary behaviorist as well as a veterinarian because the dog has been ruined emotionally and physically. And to me, they should be outlawed. They shouldn't be able to operate because it really is nothing but cruelty. And why we accept that kind of cruelty in our environment nowadays, it just seems to be more prevalent everywhere we look. And that is very, very sad, to say the least.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, of course. But the so-called balanced dog trainers, and, you know, they also say, you see on the internet, on TikTok, Instagram, these trainers, I saved the dog. The dog bit someone. The dog did this. The dog did that. And the family was at their wits' end. They were going to give up the dog. I say instead of a shock collar saving a dog, and for all the reasons we talked about are actually more dangerous, cause problems, never mind the humane issues of shocking a dog, go to a veterinary behaviorist. If you're at your wits' end, that's who to go to. I knew you'd agree. I want to talk when we come back, Julie, about a special event coming up and also what the positive beginning program is in the first place and what the biggest changes you've seen over the years, and you've been doing this years. So what the biggest changes have been over the years in our attitudes toward dogs, and we'll hear all that when we come back on WGN. From A Sound Beginning, it's Julie Oskirka on WGN. She is the founder of A Sound Beginning Program. What is that program, Julie?
A Sound Beginning is a program that was formed in 2014 after we published our book, Adopting a Dog, Start Off Right with a Sound Beginning. And we put that together specifically to help people with positive reinforcement methods. Very simply, here's a step-by-step program to follow, you know, follow a couple pages a day, you know, and you don't have to read a novel to learn how to help a new dog, you know, transition and integrate into your family when we adopt a dog. That's where the problems start to come in with people because they adopt an older dog and they expect, well, the dog should already know how to sit and stay and not jump on grandma and everything. So that's what the book was put together for. And then we added classes after the first year that the book was published because we wanted to do more to be able to help new adopters and offer that kind of support. And then we added in-home training so that we could work one-on-one with people that really wanted that extra, you know, personal support for their own problem. They didn't want to have to go to a group class or anything. And then it grew from there. So the Sound Beginning program is basically like an umbrella of all those different services that we offer. And so it is growing over the years as we started working very closely with the rescue community and in our shelters and all the organizations that have foster-based rescue and everything. So in 2022... I retired from that because I finally got to the point where, you know what, I think it's time I should start getting my Social Security before the government runs out of money. So that was what prompted my retirement, but I did not want to stopped working, I wanted to still be part of the community because I could see there was so much more that we needed to do together. And I really do feel, that's why I love everything that you do, is because you really work hard on educating people, helping them understand, you know, what's going on in the dog's mind. So that way the dog will learn, because if we start understanding what they're trying to say to us, you know, simply through dog language, like you're always promoting, then we can understand what that dog wants. And then on a level where we're both communicating with each other, anything is possible. You know, that dog that's fearful will now start becoming confident. You know, the dog that's kind of crazy and wacky and jumping all over the place starts realizing, well, you know what? When I lay down in the kitchen instead of jumping around like an idiot, usually somebody opens up that kitchen refrigerator and a piece of cheese falls down on the floor for me. So I think I'm going to start sitting down on the floor a little bit more. There's so many ways that we can help dogs become closer and more emotionally tied to their families by just spending a little bit of time understanding who they are and what their needs are. And that's what our whole program is based on. It's really, like you said, and that's like the new phrase nowadays too, is allowing the dogs to have a choice. You know, if they don't want to be petted, why are we forcing ourselves on them?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really all about the dog. Yeah,
I totally agree. Give the dog agency or choice. Dogs are sentient animals. We know they have real emotions, even though books 30 years ago said no. I would argue that dog owners for centuries have known that dogs have real emotions just like we do. And today we certainly know that's the case. So now we transition, thanks to you, to an event that you have coming up.
Yes, March 1st. Thanks to you, we are able to host a fundraiser to support DuPage County Animal Services. That's one of the local shelters in my community that does an absolutely fantastic job. Their volunteers, the people that come and work in their organization and work with the dogs and the cats and everything, they're all educated, knowledgeable, certified, wonderful people that follow the same kind of methods and protocol that you and I are talking about and we've been doing for a long time. So the event is hosted through the not-for-profit that I organized. So when I retired from the actual, you know, big public stuff that we were doing, I started a not-for-profit because we wanted to work closer with just the people that are doing the work, the people that are doing the hard jobs, the people that are taking the dogs in transport, the people that are fostering dogs in their home, the people that are the veterinarians that are working with dogs that may have been coming from a hoarder's place or a puppy mill or whatever. So our job through Positive Solutions for a Sound Beginning, which is a 501c3 charity, our job is to educate the people that provide those services to help those dogs, because what we teach them is only going to help the dogs get better and fit in and then start to educate the people. If we educate them, they'll be able to educate the adopters, and we're hoping that getting at that beginning of the dog's new journey, that we're going to be more successful with keeping that dog forever in their home, by just helping the people that are right there in the beginning. So March 1st, you are coming out to DuPage County Animal Services at 11 a.m. That's a Sunday morning. And you are doing a lecture and a book signing all about your new book, Ask the Dog. And it is going to be absolutely fantastic because everybody just loves you, number one, and you're incredible. Well, you really are. You're an incredible speaker. You're so knowledgeable, but you're so able to get that knowledge out to everybody that's listening to you, because it's a lot easier to learn when you're having a good time, and that's what we're doing with our dogs, too. We're not shoving stuff at them and forcing them to learn. We're engaging them and making them feel good, and that's how they learn. And so, you know, if the whole program that you're putting together for us and the book signing and everything and the new book that you created is just fantastic. So it's such a good opportunity. We're so looking forward to it.
All right. Again, that is March 1st. I think doors open actually at 10:30. But you have to reserve in advance. It's $40. Oh, yeah. $40 per person. We're running out of time here. So it's $40 per person. That includes a copy of the book, which I can sign if you are so inclined. After, there'll be a raffle. There'll be a talk that I'm giving regarding a new way to think about dog bite prevention. How can people get tickets for really what amounts to a benefit for DuPage County Animal Services?
Absolutely, because all the proceeds from the raffle and everything that we're collecting, every single dollar is going to DuPage County Animal Services. So you go to our website, asoundbeginningprogram.com. On the menu bar, click on seminars, and it'll come right up there, March 1st, Steve Dale, Ask the Dog. There'll be all the details about where it's at, what's going on and stuff. But we've got door prizes as well, too, and I mean some really fabulous door prizes. So you don't even have to buy a raffle ticket in order to win some of these really cool things and stuff. We've got a lot of people that are donating a lot of really wonderful stuff to be able to support the shelter and be able to support the work that you're doing in the community, educating people and helping them help the dogs.
I love it. Julie, we got to go. I understand you're even giving away a door as a door prize. Julie Oskurka, thank you so much.
I didn't tell you what kind of door it is, but yes.
I'll take any door, just so it's not all right. Shut. All right. Thank you, Julie. I am very excited about this. On March 1st, I will be speaking at DuPage County Animal Services. It's a fundraiser, really, for this organization, which is the municipal facility that really needs to get money through such fundraisers. It's $40. I'll be speaking about a new way to think about dog bite prevention. And that, again, is March 1st. Doors open at 10:30. I begin speaking at 11 a.m. It's $40, which includes a copy of the book I just wrote, Ask the Dog, as well as they have a raffle and some other things, some door prizes or whatever. But I will tell you, I am so excited about doing this. To register, it is a soundbeginningprogram.com/seminars. asoundbeginningprogram.com/seminars. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.